Our next guest is a first-time guest. He is a German homeopath who lives in Switzerland. And because he saw more and more vaccine-damaged patients in his practice, he initiated the website www.impfschaden.info. It gets easier. To inform people about the dangers of vaccinations. 10 years later, the website was translated into English under the name of www.vaccineinjury.info and is now conducting an exceptionally thorough and comprehensive scientific survey on the state of health of unvaccinated children. Topic tonight, children and adults living healthy lives without vaccines. We'll be right back with Andreas Bachmeier right after this. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome to the program, please, Andreas Bachmeier, his book, Vaccine Free. Welcome, sir.
Hi, John. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, I'm so happy to make your acquaintance. This is very interesting. Now, I don't know if you heard the first half of the program, but...
I did, yeah.
Okay. Well, you just started any way you like. First of all, what led you... Tell us about you and what led you to this work and how it became focused into this very specific area.
Well, I'm actually a homeopath. And I started with my homeopathic practice around 1996 in Germany. And then after a couple of years, I moved to Switzerland. And then I got many vaccine-injured patients.
Now, what do you mean by vaccine-injured?
Well, they had, paralysis. They had... pains where they didn't know where it comes from and different things. And what I did is I thought, well, maybe it would be a good idea to put a website up just to tell the people the backgrounds of the vaccines, you know, what's happening, what is a vaccine do, or what a vaccine does. And so that is, well, that's the background and how that developed. So,
I see. Now, do you find that this thing we call autism is on the rise, or has it been a fairly significant percentage of children in Europe?
Well, the situation, I think, here in Europe or in Germany or in Switzerland is different than in the U.S. But I think that it's on the rise. And there are probably multiple factors which lead to autism. Well, it's not just vaccines. There are different factors. And it's always hard to tell what exactly it was. But vaccines are... I think, play an important part here.
Well, let me ask you this then. Let's just get right into it. What is your opposition to vaccines? I mean, besides the damages that you just mentioned, clearly we've eradicated certain diseases. Are you against pretty much the use of all vaccines, or do you feel like they're useful in some circumstances?
Well, the thing is that you use vaccine very early in life. And, well, Howard Bloom, he said it differently, but your immune system in the early months of life is not mature. You know, you need at least a couple of months that your immune system has to grow. Well, it's developing in the uterus, but after you were born, your immune system is learning every day. You know, it's learning what is foreign, what are foreign antigens, and what is the own body. So it has to distinguish between foreign and his own parts. And well, it's a fact that that the immune system is not developed in the first couple of months of the year, even till the end of the second year, it's not developed yet. So, for example, against bacteria, the immune system has a hard time till the end of the second month.
I see.
Not just, it's just the immune system is not ready for that yet. That's why, that's the reason why your mother gives you at the end of the, before you were born, 4 weeks before you were born, you get antibodies from your mother. And these antibodies last you about 6 months, 7 months, depending on how many you get from your mother. And they protect you in the first couple of months of your new life.
Okay.
And for example, mothers who have a really low antibody count, they give to their children very low antibodies. So the children don't receive many antibodies from them.
I see. Well, yes, a pediatric nurse sent an email earlier, and she wrote that hepatitis B vaccine was being administered to, brand new little human babies at less than a month old.
Well, at the first day. Yeah. Normally they do, in the U.S., they do it on the first day. So they do it in the hospital.
Oof.
And okay. You don't see that here. In Germany or in Switzerland, they don't give it. They only give it when the mother has contracted hepatitis B and has antibodies against hepatitis B. Then they give it to the child because they think maybe they have to protect the child against hepatitis B.
Well, here's something else. I can't make out the name of the sender, but he was reading my mind with the Mark Twain, the famous Mark Twain quote. There are lies, damned lies, and statistics.
Right.
And he said all you have to do is look at this is simple, look at the founding fathers of the United States that didn't die in battle. They all lived to ripe old ages up in their 70s. And there were no vaccines except maybe, I don't know, we were talking about powdered scabs earlier for smallpox inoculation. So, obviously, people lived into their 80s and 90s. I'm sure there were some who went over 100 frequently. They had no access to vaccines. So what is the obsession and what do you attribute the widespread use of them now? I take it that you feel that most of them are unnecessary, but I didn't actually hear you say that.
I didn't say that. So I don't recommend them. And
okay.
I think the vaccines is just a big business. It's a profitable business.
Yeah.
And for example, this new vaccine, which will come out very soon, is a vaccine against meningitis B. They couldn't make it in the last two decades, so they were unable to manufacture that. But now they manufactured that, and you will see that in the coming months or years, there will be a lot of meningitis B outbreaks all over the place. And then they will implement that. And what I read on the, I don't know whether it was on the Novartis webpage, but they say it's about a $1 billion a year business just for this vaccine alone.
And they make lots of them.
Wow. So they just don't make meningitis B. They make lots of them.
The thing that's on everybody's mind in the States is the influenza virus.
Right.
So, what's your opinion of the influenza virus? Do you think that it's a derivative of the avian flu? And is there any point in your opinion of taking a vaccine against this? And clearly it's going to be no, but why not?
Well, the thing is that there are around 200 viruses which can cause influenza-like illnesses. It's not just influenza A and influenza B they have in the vaccine. So there are lots of them which can make headaches, fever, flu, flu symptoms, pains, cough, and all that stuff. And the influenza A and B, I think it represents only like 10% of all the cases, of all the circulating viruses in all the cases you have in a year. And I think they just scare you into something. And the other side, I read last week, there was a study coming, or I don't know whether it was a study, but they said all the people who got sick were vaccinated beforehand. And
That's very interesting.
Yeah, this guy on CNN, what's his name, Piers Morgan?
Oh, yes.
The guy, Alex?
Yeah.
Okay, he got vaccinated, I think, last week on air. And a couple of days later, he fell ill. So a lot of people, they are vaccinated. And then after a couple of days or weeks, they fall ill. Not influenza, but they get influenza-like symptoms because their immune system is getting weaker, and they are more prone to other diseases then.
I see. Now, the vaccines that are made in Germany,
right?
Do these contain a certain amount of mercury? That's a recurring question and a recurring assertion that these vaccines all have mercury in them and they're toxic and they cause neurological damage and autism.
They took out a lot of mercury because they were attacked for the mercury in the vaccines. So year over year they took a lot of this mercury out, but it's still in the vaccine, so it's you still find it in some flu vaccines, but you won't find it in, for example, vaccines for children anymore. So we have in Germany, for example, or in Switzerland, you have six-fold vaccines. They put everything in one vaccine, and there they took it out. But in single vaccines, you still find it. For example, the flu vaccine. And you even, I think, in the U.S., in the flu vaccines, you find more mercury than in the German one.
Mm-hmm.
So you find more flu vaccines with mercury, not more mercury.
I see. Is that the chief difference in the vaccines between the U.S. and Europe?
What do you mean, the chief difference?
Well, Is that the main difference? Is just the number of vaccines we have that have mercury in them, not necessarily the levels, or are there other differences in the U.S. And European vaccines?
Yeah, but actually, I don't think it's just the mercury. It's all these other components which are in there, like aluminum, which are not more dangerous, but they come second after mercury, aluminum.
Now, what is the justification for putting aluminum into the vaccine?
Well, the justification is that for a vaccine, if you do a vaccine trial, the results has to show that this vaccine works. And in order that this works, you have to prove that you have an antibody rise in your body, and you can count that, the antibodies. And what aluminum does is it just makes an inflammation on the site, and your immune system runs wild, and the antibodies rise. If you would take a vaccine without aluminum or with other adjuvants, the immune system wouldn't react at all. So if you take a part of a bacteria, a dead bacteria, and put it and inject it in the body, your immune system doesn't react. So you have to help a little bit, and then you just put in some aluminum or other newer adjuvants like squalene, and this stuff is just triggering your immune system, but not in a good way.
Let me ask you this: of the patients come to you to have you attempt to reverse the effects of these vaccines?
Yeah.
What's the most common symptom that you observe, and then tell us what are the more profound, maybe even the worst case of some sort of poisoning or damage from a vaccine in your patients?
Well, the most common are immune deficiencies. So they get very frequently ill. So they get sick all the time. They have a rhinitis or running nose for, 20 years, 15 years. I had one case where this woman came, she was in her 70s, and she was vaccinated in her 60s, so 15 years ago. And she had a runny nose, so rhinitis, chronic rhinitis, for the last 15 years since this vaccination. And these are common things, or pains. A lot of children, for example, they have really strange pains in body parts, and they went to many doctors, and the doctors can't find what they have. And then when you take the case history of this patient, you will find that it started a couple of days after the vaccination. So this is pretty common. Also, what's pretty common, but where people don't see a relationship with that, is ADS, attention deficit disorder.
Oh, yes.
Hyperactivity. Because the problem with this is that this starts a couple of years after the kids were vaccinated. It doesn't start 3 days after the vaccine. Because the children are vaccinated at the end of the second month of their year, of the first year. And if this vaccine does something to their brain, you won't see the damage. You will see the damage when they are three, when they are four. Maybe you see something, that they are crying a lot, but most people don't realize it.
Can you undo this damage?
Well, sometimes it's very hard, sometimes it's very easy, actually. So what I'm doing is I take this homeopathic vaccine. So you make a vaccine, and then out of this vaccine, you make a homeopathic remedy. So you take the same vaccine, and you make a homeopathic remedy out of that, which contains actually the information of this vaccine. And if you give this vaccine, this homeopathic vaccine, again to the patient, the illness or the symptoms they have, they get, or they become acute again, because the patients are in kind of a chronic state. You know, they can't help themselves anymore. They have these symptoms, but they don't disappear. So what I'm doing is I just bring them in a state where they have the acute disease again. So a simple example is with this woman I just mentioned, this older lady.
Yeah.
She received this flu vaccine again as a homeopathic remedy, and then she got very sick. So she got the flu. I think 2 days later after she took it, she fell ill with a high fever, runny nose, cough, and all headaches.
All right. I'll tell you what. Let's take our break, as inconvenient as it might be, and let's hear what happened to her when we come back with Andreas Bachmeier, his book, Vaccine Free, on Coast to Coast AM. Well, our first-time guest tonight is Andreas Bachmeier. And as we go along through here, you know, people get sick. So as we look at the structure of, well, how we interact, our little petri dish of a bunch of potential assailants to another human's body. And I'm just thinking, people get sick. So is it all reactive, or are there some things you can do to which would be like a vaccine, but is not an actual vaccine, just some homeopathic or a preventative measure that will head it off. But before you could do that, you would have to have a report that something was afoot. Oh, over there in the next county, they have the flu. Well, we'd better start drinking our powdered milk or something like that. So what I'm trying to figure out is not everybody catches the flu. Number two, some people who are vaccinated against the flu catch it anyway. So, and then some people are vaccinated after they've had the flu already, just in case they were to catch it again. I don't get it. I want to, and we're going to try to when we come back with Andreas Bachmeier. Just a moment, please. This is Coast to Coast AM. Okay, Andy, it seems like an eternity since we were last talking, but just reintroduce the woman who became sick and carry on. Tell us what happened to her.
Yeah, so she received this flu homeopathic vaccine, and so she fell ill for like 4 or 5 days or maybe a week. And then it was really hard for her because she was in her 70s, and then she got high fever. But then after the illness was gone, her chronic rhinitis was gone as well. And this is something you see very often with this kind of treatment. So the illness becomes acute, and then it will diminish, or it will go away. So even I had another case of a kid with a chronic migraine after a vaccination. And this was especially very hard for the parents and even for him as well, because the homeopathic remedy he took always triggered a migraine attack. Not as severe as normally, but he always got a migraine attack. So the mother, she administered the homeopathic remedy always on Fridays, because if she gave it to him on Wednesday, he couldn't go to school anymore. But it got less and less after she took it a while, or after he took it a while. And then I think after 3 months, he didn't have any migraines anymore.
What kind of migraines did he have? Do you mean just severe headaches, or was it the visual really aberrations also?
Yeah, really severe headaches for days. So he always had it for days, 2 or 3 days, with vomiting. So, and he couldn't go to school there. He had to take really strong painkillers. And most of the painkillers didn't help. So this is gone now with this boy. It doesn't help all the time, but especially with these kind of things, it helps a lot.
You know, Andy, I'm tempted to ask you, your work takes you into the autoimmune disorder area, doesn't it?
Yeah, right.
Well, you know, this is a real quandary. It's a real mess. First, let's get our definition straight. How can you define autoimmune disorder to us?
An autoimmune disorder is a disorder where your immune system attacks your own cells by reasons which are most of the time unknown. So.
And what are the symptoms?
Well, it depends on the autoimmune system disease you have. So, multiple sclerosis can be an autoimmune or is an autoimmune disease. So there, your autoimmune system attacks the myelin sheath around your nerves.
Yes.
So you have this kind of isolation around your nerves.
So that's a really broad category, autoimmune disorder. That's a huge category.
Yeah, huge. Tons of illnesses are autoimmune related. So diabetes, for example, diabetes type 1 is also autoimmune related.
Did not know that until this moment.
Wow, yeah, there are very many illnesses like that. And most, and the people, if you read medical literature about autoimmune disease, the cause for that is always unknown. Sometimes they may find something, or they think they have a causative factor for that, where they say, well, it's probably, it wasn't maybe a viral infection you had before. But the real reasons are mostly unknown for these illnesses. And they are very much on the rise.
Well, how do you treat anything other than the symptoms if you don't know the cause?
Well, in homeopathy, we have a totally different approach to treat illnesses.
Yeah.
So actually, you don't, because sometimes you don't have to know what triggered that. It helps, but you don't have to know it. What you have to know with homeopathy, you have to know the symptoms of the patient, because every illness is different with each person. You know, you may have a cold, and you have a different cold than your neighbor. So it's totally different. And this is what you have to know. That's why homeopathy is a treatment which takes, the first appointment you have takes about 2 hours. Because the practitioner has to know everything. It's not just 5 minutes. Oh, you have a cough, so you get this or that.
Yeah.
So I have to know everything, you know.
What are the, this might not be the easiest question to just give a quick answer to, but the chief difference between homeopathy and traditional general, let's just call it general medicine, is what?
Well, the chief difference would be that with homeopathy, you help the body to heal itself. And with normal conventional medicine is you give something and you suppress the symptoms. You don't help the body to get rid of the system. In homeopathy, the body does itself. You know, every substance you take in, for example, let's take an easy substance like coffee. If you drink coffee, so you are awake, you are alert for a couple of hours.
Sure.
And then you get tired afterwards, so you need another coffee. So these are two reactions. The first reaction is that of the coffee. The second reaction is that of your body. And with homeopathy, you always give a remedy which actually reacts as an opposite to the illness. So you give something, for example, if you can't sleep, so just a simple example. For example, you can't sleep, you would give this person maybe homeopathic coffee.
Really?
Yeah, homeopathic coffee. And your body reacts to this information of this remedy. And he reacts like that he can sleep afterwards, if that's the correct remedy. But it's totally the way around. So every remedy, let's say a conventional remedy, you take aspirin, for example, always have these second effects.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if you take aspirin against fever, so the fever goes down, but after a couple of hours, the fever goes up again. So you have to take another aspirin.
What do you do when you're confronted with something like smallpox, though? I mean, these vaccines were developed for some reason. I'm just playing devil's advocate here. And they've been around for so long, and anytime something is successful over a long period of time, you know, it becomes big business one way or another, even though we just heard from Howard Bloom a while ago that they were losing money on vaccines, and now they're not because there's a big demand for them. I mean, that's what I took from it. So,
right, yeah. Well, we don't have smallpox anymore, so I don't treat smallpox, and I'm not allowed because I'm just a healing practitioner. I wouldn't be allowed to treat that.
Well, I have heard many times over the years that the Chinese particularly regarded having a cold or flu-like symptoms, I guess we would say, as an opportunity for the body to heal or rebuild itself.
Yeah, to cleanse itself, right?
You agree with this?
Yeah, that's how I see it too. So, for example, if I give a remedy, a homeopathic remedy, and the people afterwards, he gets, well, a runny nose, or he gets maybe diarrhea. So that's a good reaction, because he gets rid of the substances maybe he doesn't need anymore.
Okay. All right. Then, let me ask you this. When you're confronted, not everybody's immune system is of the same power. Clearly, some are stronger than others. So I suppose the biggest problem would be that different causes or different sources of an ailment, but only one fix for all of them. But that seems to be all right, because you just said a while ago that you don't really need to know where it came from or why it happened. I mean, am I correct there? Because I don't know. That seems risky. It seems like I would have to delve very deeply into your world to figure out how I can stop something. Yeah, because you keep hearing these cliches like Western medicine addresses the symptom, Eastern medicine addresses the cause. But if you don't know the cause, I don't know. I'm still having trouble wrapping my mind around that one.
Well, the thing is, a homeopath, very often, he gets patients where they don't know what's the cause of the illness. You know, in chronic conditions, you don't know what you have, actually. They run from this doctor to the next doctor, and maybe they say different things. Maybe they say, well, I don't know it, what you have. And I have a lot of these patients. And for these patients, for me, it doesn't matter. I don't have to find a real cause, you know. I just take the symptoms he has, and I check the symptoms, and he gets a remedy for that. And if I know the cause, it's easier for me to treat, but I don't have to know it. So it's not just that, maybe you can conclude that I just treat symptoms with that. I just have to know the symptoms to get a picture of the patient, you know?
Yeah.
And when I have a picture of the patient, I have to find the correct remedy for this picture of symptoms the patient shows.
You know, as I was looking through your book here, I see just almost continual mentions of autism, and this is just a deep, dark mystery. I mean, I don't even know how it's treated now, other than with patent medicines. I mean, what sort of therapy is available that's of the non-prescription type?
Well, actually, that's how I said and how I treat it, and lots of practitioners are treating it. So if the autism was triggered by a vaccine, it can be triggered by other things, but let's take the vaccine. If the autism was triggered by a vaccine, you have to give this vaccine again as a homeopathic remedy. And this is what... You take a long time. So autism takes a very long time to treat, especially because it's not only one vaccine the children received. Most of the time, they received many, many vaccines. So especially in the U.S., you get a lot of single vaccines. So if the child received maybe 20 vaccines in the first 2 years, maybe you have to give all these vaccines to treat the autism, because sometimes you don't know where it comes from. And this is actually, it's not a homeopathic approach. It's an esopathic approach, because you give the same remedy in homeopathy, you give a similar remedy. So you give a remedy for a person which has certain symptoms, and you give the remedy which can cause similar symptoms in this patient.
I see.
So like cures like, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And with treating vaccine damages, it's very hard to find a good picture of symptoms in the patient. The patients have symptoms, but they don't fit for a certain remedy. So that there you give this the vaccine again, so the homeopathic vaccine. And this is actually the same which caused the illness. And if you give that, the kids, they change very slowly, but they change. And it doesn't help all the time, because sometimes it was not just the vaccine. There are so many causative factors which can contribute to this disease. So like other toxic substances they got, maybe in the mother's womb they got something, and maybe the mother got had to take medications. There are several factors.
I see. Asperger's. Do you encounter that much in Europe?
We have that, but it's always hard to define that, because it's kind of a low autism. Asperger is kind of autism, but with a high functioning, they function very high. So it's not as prominent as autism. So their linguistic behavior is pretty normal sometimes. So the problem with these diagnoses is always that it's hard. How can I say that? To diagnose what the patient has.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just had 3 weeks ago, I had a patient, and they told me first they had the child had a genetic disorder. Then the doctors weren't sure anymore after 2 or 3 weeks. And then they said, well, it can't be a genetic disorder. Probably he has autism. So after, and then they, well, that child had autism then for 5 months or 6 months. And then they said, well, it's probably not autism. It has to be something else. Now the child has like something like developmental retardation.
All right.
So it's very hard to diagnose these symptoms, you know, or to diagnose these illnesses.
Okay, I tell you what, Andy, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the forced vaccinations we're experiencing over here in some of the workplaces and some of the official sectors of our civilization, and also what sorts of homeopathic applications we might be able to avail ourselves of without having to get into it as deeply as you are. We'll be back with Andreas Bachmeier on Coast to Coast AM. It's all about vaccines tonight.